Welcome to the World Heart Podcast. I'm your host, Pablo Perel, Senior Science Advisor at the World Heart Federation. In this podcast, we discuss the importance of data in informing policies and clinical practices. In previous episodes, we have explored different aspects of the World Heart Observatory, which is, I hope our audience will know by now, the knowledge hub that curates, aggregates, and visualizes global data on cardiovascular health. Today, we will be talking about the INTERASPIRE study, which is the latest addition to the World Heart Observatory. To discuss this, we are delighted to welcome Professor David Wood. David is a true pioneer in the world of cardiovascular disease prevention. With academic roles at both the University of Galway in Ireland and Imperial College London in the UK, he has made an incredible impact on international policies and guidelines. David has played a leading role in shaping the field, from founding the European Association of Cardiovascular Prevention and Rehabilitation to other important roles, including being the World Heart Federation president. His groundbreaking research spans across the world, but I would like to focus particularly on the ASPIRE, EUROASPIRE, and now the INTERASPIRE studies. In these studies, he explored with his team preventive cardiology, how is practiced globally. And he also, importantly, not only finished on seeing how it is practiced, but he conducted innovative trials like EuroAction and EuroAction Plus, showcasing how nurse-led care can transform cardiovascular prevention. Beyond research, David is an educator, teaching and inspiring future leaders in cardiovascular prevention around the world. We couldn't be more excited to have him here today. Welcome, David.
Thank you very much, Pablo. A pleasure to be with you.
So we're here to talk today about the INTERASPIRE study, David. Please, can you tell us about the study and what was the main question the study was designed to answer?
Yes, we have conducted a number of surveys of secondary and primary prevention of cardiovascular disease across Europe called EuroASPIRE under the auspices of the European Society of Cardiology. And we decided to expand this study internationally. And that was the foundation of INTERASPIRE. And the objective of INTERASPIRE, which was undertaken across 14 countries around the world, at least one country from each of the six WHO regions, was to describe how well patients with coronary artery disease are being managed in terms of secondary prevention using the international guidelines as our standard.
And why is important to do it now? One would expect, you've been working on secondary prevention for so many years. We would expect that this is something that it's already dealt with and we know is good. Why it was so important to do a global study on this?
So it is very important to evaluate real world practice. Because we have evidence, one of the best evidence bases in medicine on how to reduce both the risk of developing cardiovascular disease and for those who do develop it, how to reduce their risk of recurrent disease and improve their chances of survival. A very, very strong evidence base indeed, but translating that evidence base through guidelines into daily clinical practice remains, I think, the biggest challenge. And that's why it's important to undertake these types of studies on a regular basis to really objectively quantify the extent to which we are achieving the guideline standards.
Can you tell us a little bit more about, the practical aspects of the study? Which population you included and which settings? These were hospitalized patients that you follow up. Can you tell us a little bit more about the design of the study?
Yes, we worked through national societies of cardiology in 14 countries, and through them identified a national coordinator, and they were responsible for identifying three geographic regions in the country and every public hospital in each of those regions. And then we took a convenient sample of these hospitals spanning from tertiary centers through to district general hospitals. And in each of these hospitals, we identified a consecutive sample of patients who had been admitted to the hospital with an acute coronary syndrome or for elective revascularization. We invited these patients back to the hospital about a year or so after their acute coronary event to interview and examine them. And we used standardized methods, including a central laboratory in Helsinki to measure lipids and so on. And in this way, we were able to collect high-quality data and make valid comparisons within and between countries on how well patients were being managed.
For our audience, we'll put the link at the bottom of this podcast so they can all read the full paper, and there are many interesting results, and I'm sure there will be many follow-up analyses. But if you have to say, what would you say is the most significant result of the study, like the headline?
So I think the most important and rather unexpected finding was the low provision of cardiac rehabilitation worldwide. We know from randomized controlled trials that patients who develop coronary artery disease benefit from comprehensive prevention and rehabilitation programs to help them address their lifestyle and to control their risk factors and to understand and adhere with their cardioprotective medications. And yet, only 27% of the entire coronary patient population was actually referred to any form of prevention and rehabilitation, and less than 1 in 10 actually attended. So 91% of patients did not have the benefits of this evidence-based intervention to reduce their risk of recurrent coronary disease and to improve their life expectancy, which is frankly shocking. And that requires action by policymakers and politicians to ensure that such service provision is made.
Regarding the finding on rehabilitation, maybe this is related with another finding, that is the very low achievement of the score. Maybe you want to share with the audience, what was that score and what were the results regarding that score?
We developed what we call the Interaspire guideline target score, 10 points, three related to achievement of lifestyle goals in relation to tobacco and obesity and sedentary behavior, three in relation to risk factor goals, blood pressure, lipids, and glucose, and four in relation to prescriptions of the key cardioprotective medications. And out of this score of 10, less than 1% actually achieved 10 out of 10. 24% of these patients has achieved a score of 8 or more. And actually a quarter of this entire patient population had a score of 5 or less. And this score illustrates the overall challenge in terms of helping patients to achieve a healthier lifestyle and to get their risk factors under control to guideline targets, and of course to be prescribed and adhere with cardioprotective medications.
That for me, it's also kind of a headline, and as you said, like a shocking headline. I mean, that very low percentage that achieved that score. And of course, as you said, it might be part at least related with the lack of referral to rehabilitation programs of this population. I would like to talk a little bit about the conduct of such a study. I can imagine, and you've been leading many studies for decades, David, but this was an international study. And not only it's difficult to do international study, you did it during COVID. So I can imagine, can you share and summarize some of the challenges you face, and particularly for those that listen to us, that they might be interested in conducting international studies and lessons learned in doing so?
Well, we could not have faced a bigger challenge to international research. The study was formed in 2019 and piloted in Argentina and Malaysia. And no sooner had we returned from training the teams in Buenos Aires, COVID-19 arrived. And that had a big impact on research internationally and specifically on the InterAspire study in two ways. The first was that patients were understandably reluctant to come back to hospital, to be inside hospital where the interviews and examinations were conducted. And that affected our response rate. And it also lengthened the duration of the study because we tried very hard to bring these patients back, but we had to wait for lockdown restrictions to be lifted and then approach them again. So it was an enormous challenge. But thanks to the efforts of the national coordinators, supported by the national societies and the hard work of the principal investigators at each hospital, we achieved completion of the study in 2023.
And what do you think are the incentives? I mean, how did you manage to get, I guess at the end might be related with individuals and people that are really passionate about what they do, just lessons learned to people that want to do global studies. I mean, what would be your kind of advice for people that are trying to make these type of studies?
Well, there is, of course, an altruistic element to all research, and we depend upon people, patients, giving up their time voluntarily and without payment to contribute to new science. But we also provided a service for these patients in that the interview and examination and the results of the blood tests and so on were made available to them and to their physicians, which allowed them to address aspects of their care which needed to be improved. So there was a personal return for patients individually.
Another aspect that we mentioned that is quite unique about and is a strength about this study is that international, and as you said, you have representation from the different WHO regions. Was anything in particular that you like to highlight in terms of differences according to regions on your findings?
Yes, there were very large differences between countries and indeed between regions. We did not make a formal comparison at a regional level because the number of countries in each region was small and therefore it was not statistically valid. But the comparison between countries showed vast differences, not least in the provision of cardiac rehabilitation, nor in the or in the achievement of the guideline target score. The provision of rehabilitation was very low on the African continent, very high in Europe, with countries falling in between those two extremes. And that heterogeneity in the provision of care is, I think, one of the major reasons that we see these treatment gaps.
So you mentioned already a few implications, but I would like, again, to hear your reflections. I mean, how this study, the InterAspire study, can influence decision makers and clinical practice. What do you think are the take-home messages of this study?
Well, I think this is an important question which can be addressed at different levels. And as you know, the World Heart Federation has produced its own roadmap on secondary prevention, recently updated. Directed towards policymakers and politicians. The results of the InterAspire study conducted with WHF as a scientific partner are showcased on the Global Heart Observatory. And I hope that WHO, through its advocacy team, will make policymakers and politicians aware of this tremendous gap in the provision of evidence-based secondary preventive care. But beyond international lobbying, we have also made a point of working through national societies of cardiology. We are giving the national societies their own data set. We're inviting them to analyze and present and publish these data and to use these data for advocacy purposes at a national level. In other words, we don't just see the outcome of the InterAspire study as being scientific publications in peer-reviewed journals, but these data being used for the purposes of advocacy in order to try and raise standards of care.
Which I agree, I mean, is key. It's very important to use that data at the national level. But maybe, I come back to one of a comment I made at the beginning, David. I mean, you've been working on secondary prevention for decades. And this is the first cause of death worldwide. I mean, you are reporting a study where you are saying 1% of the population are achieving, all the targets. I mean, why is this happening? I mean, is this something that is frustrating you? I mean, after so many years of working on this field, why we don't succeed to implement what we know?
Well, this is a fundamental question, Pablo. And as you know, research, particularly clinical research, for example, in the evaluation of new drug treatments, evaluated in the most rigorous way with randomized controlled trials, assessing efficacy and safety and so on, which lead to the best of these drugs being licensed and prescribed in clinical practice. And you might think that that's job done, but it isn't. Because actually implementing evidence-based drug therapies in real-world practice faces many, many more challenges. And those challenges are being addressed by the World Heart Federation and other bodies. But the need to demonstrate that you can implement new treatments in a clinically and cost-effective way is the big missing piece in this prevention sphere. And that's where I think we should be focusing our efforts, is implementation research to convince policymakers and politicians that we can deliver this in a real-world setting and we can deliver it in a cost-effective way.
And definitely, as you said, World Health Federation is working on this, and these type of studies are really important for the advocacy work that we do, David. You mentioned a few things already about implementation research and the need to move, but is there any other finding from the InterAspire study that raise, I'm sure you're going to plan secondary analysis of the data, but any kind of, say, urgent research question that you would say from the results of the InterAspire study?
Well, I think one of the important aspects of the InterAspire study is that we focused on diabetes. And as you know, diabetes is a major international problem. Following the international growth in obesity worldwide. And in InterAspire, we reported on those with known diabetes, but then we undertook an oral glucose tolerance test in the remainder of the population. And extraordinarily, we found that 3/4 of these patients with coronary disease had either undetected diabetes or impaired glucose tolerance. In other words, the presentation with coronary artery disease is almost synonymous, dysglycemia and diabetes. And I think this is an important observation because it reflects the commonality of the etiology of this disease and the need for primary prevention to address lifestyles of populations as being the most important way of reducing this the burden of this disease worldwide. And such lifestyle interventions should, of course, address nutrition and weight management and physical activity. Otherwise, we end up with a sick population and with sick individuals with coronary disease.
Absolutely agree. So to finish, David, I think I would like to ask you a common question we were asking our guests that is a very general one. What do you understand by global cardiovascular research? I mean, it doesn't need to be a formal definition. Your understanding on what it is, global cardiovascular research.
Well, I have a very particular perspective on this, and that is that we need, in the context of cardiovascular disease, we need to be able to understand the principles of the causes of the disease and how it can be prevented, but then to apply that knowledge and principles to different settings, to different countries with different socioeconomic structures, different health service provision, because all of this needs to be adapted to the specific needs of local populations. And it is that translation of our knowledge of cause and how a disease can best be prevented. It's the translation of that knowledge at a national level, which is the most important aspect of research.
So clearly there's a huge need of more global cardiovascular research by that definition. So I want to thank you again very much, David, for sharing your insights and about this very interesting study that it has been a pleasure listening to you.
Thank you very much, Pablo.
I encourage everyone, the whole audience, to read the full paper that you can find the link at the bottom of this podcast. We also want to thank the Novartis Foundation that support this episode and the World Health Observatory. And to our audience, thanks for listening. Keep exploring the World Health Observatory with the also with the summary that we have at the moment of the INTERASPIRE study. And we hope to that you join us next time. Thank you very much.